Hey, welcome back, everybody, to my podcast. And today's guest is head coach of Türk Telekom, Erdem Can. Erdem is a long friend of mine when he was an assistant coach for Fenerbahce under Zeljko Obradovic. That's when we met. And since then, we've really spent a lot of time together talking about basketball and having deep-rooted discussions of the nuances of the game, as we did today. And today, the main focus was on the transition period from being an assistant coach for a long time to becoming a head coach. When do you know that you're ready? What steps to take, and the importance of discussion and communication as well. Some thoughts on Zeljko, some thoughts on Quinn Snyder, and a lot of thoughts on basketball. So please enjoy this episode and share with everyone that you think can profit from it or benefit from it rather. And talk to you soon. See you soon. Bye. Action, Erdem.
Action, Menas.
Action. We're back in action, and we're both having a coffee, I assume.
Yeah, exactly. It's not as good as yours, I'm sure.
Well, today we'll not explore the coffee world. We'll explore the basketball world a little bit.
Okay, let's do that.
Yeah, for all the head coaches, I prepare four quarters, and for you, I prepared just a little bit of background, I'm not going to touch too much on the very far past, you know, just to explore some little notes of your background, then assistant coach duties, then the head coaching part, and we will finish, of course, with some communication and politics, that basketball politics, not okay. Geopolitics. And then at the end, I have some ATOs for you that I throw out, and I'll see how quick your reaction time is for the ATOs.
That's great.
To execute. First of all, thanks for being here. It means a lot.
No, thank you for your invitation. Honestly, thank you.
Yeah, we've known each other for, I want to say 10 years now. So do you remember when we met?
I believe more. Yeah, I was with Fenerbahce my first year.
Yeah, yeah.
With Gianni Gianni.
Yes, I believe we met at the it was a preseason tournament, and we met at the hotel, I think, and we talked and watched some clips and videos.
That was Sardinia, right? It was a tournament in Sardinia.
Oh, Sardinia! I actually thought it was in Istanbul because we came to play Fener in Istanbul.
No, before that we were in Sardinia and you guys were there.
Okay, I didn't drink enough coffee today. You're right,
probably. You'll see.
But to start digging a little bit in the background, before that time, you're a head coach now, but you were a head coach before you became assistant coach at Fener, and you were 30 years old, if I calculate more or less. Was it like around this?
Exactly, I was 30.
Okay, Wikipedia didn't fail me. I'm glad. So just to remember that time, how did you feel being that young as a head coach, taking over and experiencing a new role in your career this early, this big?
Benas, first of all, the first moment I start coaching 20 years old. And the time that I realized I love this, this is not a job for me. I love this game and I'm living with it. My target always been to be the best possible coach. So that was, from that day, I was starting to prepare myself, educate myself, and et cetera, and et cetera. And to be honest, the moment came, the team was in a very difficult situation. Head coach was fired, and then there was another assistant coach became head coach. And then they after a couple games, they said, okay, you are now your turn, you are head coach. So this was a little bit of a messy situation. It was not easy for a rookie coach taking over a team first time as a head coach. The chemistry was broken. The conditions were not so good. But you always feel until you get that position, you always feel like, okay, I can do it. But once I get into that, and now I am watching myself from here to those days, and majority of the things that I've done, I wouldn't do. It was totally wrong. The communication with the team, communication with the people, communication with the players. I'm starting with communication because I believe much more important than X and O's coaching is about communication and trust. These are the two things in my life that I learned until now. So those days were painful for me. And once I got fired after 2 months, I got fired. We had very difficult schedule and we won only one game and they fired me. There are different details about the reaction that I did to the organization. I'm still proud of that. I think I will do the same thing. If we dig in more, I would explain also. But because you need to be yourself, first of all. Anyway, that was as a rookie coach, first time, 30 years old. I can say that majority of the things that I've done was wrong. At least would have been much better. And then the day they fired me, I said, it's over. You are done. There is no life. You live for that moment. It's done. But it's not. It's totally opposite. Gave me another opportunity to improve myself. And then they started my story with Fenerbahce. And then I came to this point. So basically, life brings you always different opportunities.
Full circle, huh? It's crazy how the world, this basketball world, sometimes works. It gives you an opportunity. You fail at it. And then at some point, you know, those are valuable lessons, I think, that you took away for the future. And then you always are able to reflect on something and compare with your own actions. And after being an assistant for such a long time at Fener, I'm sure that there was a rich bag of experience that you brought into your current role. And that's probably, it's part of the whole journey.
Yeah, basically, I always say that I am very lucky because I had a chance after that experience. Like, got fired, and then I had a chance to start in Fenerbahce as a third assistant coach. It's like a video coordinator.
Yep.
Imagine, this is about your desire. I was head coach, I got fired, and then I was fine with much less money, with a much, much smaller role, but I was ready to take that challenge because I wanted to start for and your dream to be in Fenerbahce end of the day.
So
lots of sacrifices you have in your life. And then I spent 1 year as third assistant with Pianigiani. Was a bad season, but sometimes you learn what not to do also, right?
Yeah.
You observe and learn what not to do. And then Jelko Bradovic. I met with Jelko first time, but we build up a great relation. I learned a lot from him. And like you said, I think it's important to know what you want to do. I think that's important. And end of the day, there are ups and downs, you know, bad days and stuff, but you need to understand if you believe that you are doing the right thing, no matter what, you never give up and you go on in your way and life brings you different opportunities. And then it's important how you respond to those opportunities.
Yep. And Let's dive right into the Obradovic period, because I still had some things that I wanted to address in the background, but I think maybe we can talk about it later. I will try to segue back to the parts, but I feel like it's a good opportunity to keep talking about the lessons that you learned throughout the time with Obradovic, that when you were assistant, you were a video coordinator, you were moving up to being assistant and a very impactful assistant, because I always saw you on the sideline yelling and calling out the play calls, and we were doing it to each other at some point. But it's also, like you said, it's a passion that it's a very, to me, I find it very satisfying when you know what the other team is going to do, and you are, you know, I see the energy on the sideline. But when you were during the games or in the preparation for the games, what lessons, if you look back now, if you could say maybe, let's say, the top three lessons that you took from Obradovic that are still imprinted in you and you feel like those are really integral to your success right now, what would they be?
Thank you for saying that your success, because I haven't succeeded in it, so thank you.
You're on the way.
I would say definitely first thing is relation and building up the trust. This is the first thing. Because no matter how demanding you are, no matter how sometimes harsh criticizing you are, your players can respond it only if they trust you and if they believe in you. Otherwise, it's just going to break the relation, break the trust of the player. And no matter what you say, how much right you are, it's not matter. This is the first thing. Second thing, I learned from Jelko to prepare yourself 100% for all the options, offensively, defensively. I'm talking now technical side, because he's always ready. No matter what happens, he's always ready. Okay, team reacts in a good way, in a bad way, or that choice is right for that game, wrong for that game. It's not the problem. The thing is, he is ready all the time. He's ready all the time. And stay humble. 13. I haven't seen anybody like him, like outside of the court. He is like one of the person you can reach him all the time. You can talk, you can communicate, you can joke with him, you can enjoy with him. So I said, Erdem, if you want to be great, first of all, be yourself, because this is him outside of the court. This is him. Inside of the court, him also. How focused he is, how concentrated, how prepared himself. So basically, be yourself, but build up the things like relation-wise, be a person who is trustable, and then prepare yourself for all the technical questions and problems. And again, it's, I always say that I was having with my notebook all the time with him. Either I was writing technical-wise, whatever he does, or any conversation that we have about anything in life, about basketball, I was writing in my mind. So that was great, great, great days for me.
So in terms of trust, there's also not only a trust in terms of player coaches, but there's a trust within the staff that has to be established. How was the relationship building with Jelko and his staff that you, he brought his assistants, but he also, you were already there in terms of developing the trust with the, because usually head coaches bring their assistant coaches everywhere, right? So he brought some, but he also had you. And there's also a time that it takes to understand each other, to trust each other, to show vulnerability, to understand each other. How did that over time, how did that develop? How did you guys build the trust?
I think this was one of the great things that I was the lucky one, that I worked so hard before to prepare myself, because he was one of my idol coaches. And I used to do for many coaches, but especially for Jelko, I used to prepare all his offenses, watching his games. And I prepared my own notebook about his offenses. And the first day we met, I gave him a book about his offenses. I gave him this book. I said, Coach, I know what you are playing. These are your plays. And he started laughing. He said, you are giving me my plays. And then he laughed. He looked at it. And I prepared that in a bookstore, like Jelko Obradovic offenses, blah, blah, blah. And then he opened some of the offenses. I already know the names, but all the details are drawn. He laughed at me. His agent was next to him. He gave to his agent. And then I thought he didn't even look at it after he laughed. But 3 days later, one of the first practices after the practice, he came and he said to me, do you remember the book that you gave me about my plays? I said, yes, coach. Okay, prepare 2-3 more, give my assistant coaches, the other coaches. So so that was a great step, that showing that my desire, my preparation, and then I was myself. Because you cannot lie to this kind of people who are real leaders, who knows from all your attitude who you are. You cannot lie to them. So I think he felt that how much I have desire, how much I have respect, how much I love this game, and I'm ready to give my energy for the team, for organization, and how much I want to get better. And he respected that. He trusted me. And end of the day, again, I grow up as a person, as a coach with him a lot, but this never stopped. So after we left, I kept the same way with other coaches as well. This will be probably another chapter in our conversation. But he is the unique one, Benas. He is unique. I mean, you can only understand and feel it once you work with him. Believe me. And I think he will stay unique for forever in European basketball.
That's why he is who he is. But leaders recognize people. They understand people. I think that's the main thing, that they feel other people. They read people very well. I think that you have to be, as a leader, you have to have good empathy for the other people, and also understand, you know, and read whether it's a good person or not good person. You have to establish the trust, and that's something that leaders recognize right away, I feel, and your investment probably also was the, one of the steps. If we look at the tactics a little bit as an assistant coach now, like the play calls, you were scouting, you were watching the opponent teams, and you were also very quick in recognizing the other team's offenses, of who they're going for, and etc. As an assistant coach, how did you? It's important to have the play calls, but how do you feel? Like if you don't have the play call, do you feel like this is a difference maker or not? Because I feel like if you have certain rules on defense that are established and the players know, and they know the situations that in every different angle of the game, of the court, they should know how to defend, except for some special actions that's when the assistant coaches absolutely help the most. How do you feel the play calls are, like on a scale 1 to 10, what do you think are the importance of the play calls?
I would say definitely at least 8. Why? Because more than just calling the play calls, that's also link connecting the bench, coaches, and players to each other. Because I lived in this in an NBA also. It doesn't change, because players, no matter what happens, players wants to hear the details, wants to hear the help at that moment. That makes them feel better. That makes them much more concentrated. And the feedback you gave them at that moment make them to be much more focused, and then to perform better. That's, I think, that's obvious, because whatever principles you have, like absolutes, and you work on those, when the time comes in the game, you need to repeat one more time. And maybe this is one of the way to repeat that, just by calling the set play, because I used to do, like, I call the set play, but then after, I call the details. I say, this action is going to come, and then this come, and then this is why I was talking too much, because I was explaining the players what to do. Sometimes players feel much comfortable, like whatever they hear, they immediately turn and show you the play. And then they wait you to explain them what to do. So they feel much, much more comfortable. Okay, you do your absolutes, of course. But once they hear that, it gives much more confidence to player. And I think that link, that synergy you create together as a team, that affects more than one play. And you know what's happening? That breaks the other team's routines. And I would say even courage. Like, I saw many coaches, now they are my good friends, but many head coaches was pissed off me, because I was, whenever he said the offense, I was jumping and saying, this action, that action, and that action is going to come. And then he says, okay, they are ready. And opponent team says, hey, they are ready. And then they try to create the counter of the offense before you defend them. That happened many times. So I think this is important. But this is important if you have 5 players really focused at the same time. And we had our leader, Jelko, always was leading the group and make them believe how important this. Once you make the team believe that, then it's much more valuable, as you know.
Yeah, I always felt like you can break a team, like you said, it breaks confidence or courage, but also the rhythm by, it's not necessarily, I've always felt like it takes a lot to call out the whole action, right? Everything that's happening, because it's happening in game speed, and you have to really, you know, the players have to be switched on and also anticipate the actions to an extent. But it helped when you call out the player of who they're going for, because a lot of times it's also mismatched or who they're trying to attack. Like, you know, like you, like it doesn't, they help you by calling the play as well, your team. But in essence, you know, like they don't know the play. So you make it easier for them by calling it, hey, I don't know, Devin, like they're going for you, like they're coming for you, exactly. Backstreet there. It's just the small action that goes straight to the point of what they're going for afterwards. Exactly. It's your rules that play. Your rules are playing for you. You have to know this screen I guard this way. I have to prepare with the
Or you have adjustments. or yes. you have adjustment, and that helps you to make the players to be aware of the adjustments. Because in EuroLeague, you know that you have, of course, you have structure, but we always been during the game. I learned from Jelko this, and I totally agree. You can never defend defensively. You can never be predictable. You shouldn't be predictable. Let's put it in that way. You should be able to change your defense and react to the moment. I don't believe one defensive structure is going to solve everything. At least you wanna, at least if you wanna be a highest level team, you should be able to defend in 2-3 different ways during the game, changing your defense. So it's important how you help the team at that moment. Now yes. we change. We are not hedging, okay, for this moment. Now, for example, in my team right now, I build up our terminology, our own terminology, but I build up defensive hand signals as well. So it's helping us a lot. So if we hedge, we have hand signal, and I can switch from one defense to another just showing with hand signal the defense. Mm-hmm. And then that makes you unpredictable defensively also.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I like when you mess with other teams' offense by keep changing your defensive concepts, because the other teams adjust and they get a rhythm, and then when you change pick and roll defense and you completely change their spacing, their points of attack, it messes constantly. And then you throw in a zone, you throw in something else, you keep switching it up, and makes the game messy and a little bit of a, you know, like trashy. I don't know how to junk it up. You junk it up a little bit.
Exactly. But one thing that I don't hate, I will share with you very honestly, the zone defense. Some teams make just go zone, but without any principle, they just show up zone, and then they do. Players don't even know what to do. I think that's ugly. But okay, it's like junking, messing up with the rhythm and etc. But I don't like that, to be honest.
No, for sure, you have to have it prepared. You have to have it in your pocket. But with principles, and it's easier during the season to prepare that and be ready for the end of the season to switch it up. You know, and like I compare it to national team, and it's almost impossible to do 3-4 different, especially in a FIBA window, which I'm not even going to talk about how difficult it is. But you mentioned, I wanted to touch a little bit on the NBA part in two parts, an assistant coaching part now and the communication part later. But in an assistant coach, when you work with Quinn, I work with Quinn. He's a genius too. I mean, we both agree. There's nothing that can be said. Whoever met Quinn before and whoever has a feel for him knows that he's a special mind that is working in our world. But if you remember that year with the Jazz, where did you feel like you picked up the most on during that season as assistant coach working in the NBA and understanding Quinn's thought process? He came in, I have a whiteboard here, but he came in, sometimes he came into the office and said, Benas, what do you think about this? And within 10 minutes, he threw out the whole whiteboard was full of pick and roll offensive situations. So it's just like thrown at you, and whatever bounces back, he goes with it. So he's a very creative person. But what do you feel you pick up the most on that you can apply now?
One thing I think the way he used I'll say language, but the way he talks with the team, the direction that he gives his team and he makes his team to believe in this, it's amazing. I mean, what I see is in NBA, it's player-oriented organization, correct? And it's from coach's side to impact the team, impact players, it's not easy. As a leader, the way he explained the things really, really affects each one of them. Maybe I can say I am the luckiest one because I work with Jelko Obradovic over here in Europe, and I work with Quinn Snyder, two head coaches that I work. I think both are genius, and they have great mind, and they are so open to share. The biggest thing for me working with Quinn, that he was so open to share, to discuss. It was all of a sudden you jump into a basketball conversation takes like 4 hours. You start talking about this, that, and then you really get better after 4 hours because you question each other, you create something, and he is always listening, and he's always, how about this? How about that? And then we take notes, and after 4 or 5 hours, we have a bunch of cards, you know, his play cards, bunch of cards like this that we draw the offenses. I still keep it myself because it's like, it's like you invent something totally new. And then he is very brave, really, about executing all of this stuff with the team in games. And one another thing is he is very, very, very prepared about opponent scouting offensively and defensively, very well prepared. And again, my luck is to be with Jelko and Quinn same way. They always pay attention to details a lot. The details that many coaches don't even pay attention are the huge differences for them. Like offensively, offensive spacing is for Jelko. If you have one step not on the right space, that changes everything. And this is now, for me, my DNA. I am obsessed with that. And the timing, same way. And same with Quinn. And the offenses that he draws, his imagination, his creation is amazing. And is really amazing. And then the way he executes, as I said, the way he makes his players to believe in that, because it's not easy. That's players' world in NBA, so that's not easy. But he make it believable for the players. So I got lots of things from him. As an assistant coach, it's important to work with head coaches that are so open to share with you, to listen. And then end of the day, they make their judgment, their decision, but they are so open. So you can improve both sides. Like you can help him, he will help you for sure.
Yes, the thing, Quinn changed my way of thinking because of his his mind is like a rainbow. You know, I look at other minds, it's like black and white. You have some shades of gray, you have some. But with Quinn, it was like, he opened up a completely different sphere of like fantasy basketball almost, you know, when you go on the court and you have like this action and then you can use this screen this way. And then there's a different way of creative basketball that encouraged me and made it more fun to be on a sideline, made it more fun to like amplify my ideas. And it's like, oh, I actually can use them. You know, it's not always in Europe. You can see it a lot of times being very, very systematic and too many frames within the offensive sets where the creativity of the players is taken away. And with Quinn, it amplified the players to be themselves, basically. And he always said, look at the tape, watch your team, they will tell you what they like, they will tell you they will tell you how they want to play, who you extract that information from video, and then you can amplify that on the court.
So it was for me, like post game meetings are like lecture. So it's very important. So it's same with Jelko and Quinn, same way. Like post game meetings, you watch and learn, or you say, oh, also this one, why not? Or that action that I can throw it out, I can put something else, because the way they look and the way they use the language is also impressive. Because coaching is coaching. But as a person, how much you make your players or team to feel you as a leader, as a mastermind, how much you can make them feel you, it's the difference, I think. Mm-hmm. So they both are great about that.
Yeah, with Quinn, there's no other way of doing things. And you can't... People have a hard time imagining it, but the discussions that you have day to day, not only with Quinn, but with the coaching staff in general. I will call out Kamzura now because we just worked in the FIBA window, but we talk and talk and talk and talk and talk. And sometimes you come back to square one, but you touched on every topic, and sometimes you can dig a little bit more in one direction. And you come to find solutions. It's just a constant way of digging, and maybe some scrapping here. And when you arrive to the game, you did your homework, and you see one thing and you see something else happening, you can immediately adjust because you already talked about it. You already discussed, you already discussed those little things that may make a difference in one position or the other. And then the game just takes off in a different direction. If you didn't discuss, if you have didn't have those discussions during the game, you don't have time, you finish. You don't have time to do
or you had one discussion which you did not use for that specific game, but next game, the discussion you did game before is helping you for that game because it's hanging there. Because, you know, balloons is over there, and then boom, we talk about that, and then you execute. You, but it's the fun part. If you have people, I'm not saying coaches, because you can make this conversation with players. Now I enjoy a lot because I do the similar conversations with my players, and I like to listen to them. So once I start conversation with them, those small balloons are over there that I made discussion, already discussed with them. They demand maybe at that moment for that opponent. I say, no, for this game, not great. But next game, exactly what he said is over there. So you need to be open to that discussion and you need to be ready to enjoy. Because if you don't enjoy, that means you are not motivated and you are not focused. And all this talk goes away. If you really enjoy, then this is not just basketball. This is in life, right? If you like to talk about music, if you really enjoy, then everything you talk with your friend about one song, one singer, you will next day go and listen to that and you will tell him, hey, this was. But if you don't enjoy, it's just a momentary conversation.
Yeah, and those like that one song can trigger memories, you know, and
exactly,
and then you bring them back, and we're having a phenomenal metaphor discussion here. I love it. So let's use that as a segue to your head coaching role right now. When do you feel with the experience? How do you know when you're ready to be a head coach? During the time when you were working with Schalke already, and you guys won a EuroLeague together, and when does the urge come? When do you feel like it's the right time to be a head coach? And I know the year in Utah was a strange year. I mean, it was just 1 year in the middle of a transitioning period. Maybe during the time of your long time with Schalke, and then thinking about a head coaching role, when do you think start thinking about a head coaching, being a head coach, and feeling that you're ready?
To be honest, the time that I start with Schalke, I was feeling that I am building up myself, my personality as a coach, because it's not just, again, same thing. It's not just about X and O's. You learn, you listen, you see the preparation psychologically to prepare yourself, your team, all these factors you watch and prepare yourself. So I was taking my lessons watching him. And during the all time that we work, I put it in my mind, like whenever I leave from Schalke, I don't know how and when happens, I am ready for head coaching. And this was my already challenge in my mind. And unfortunately, that happened earlier than I expect when Schalke left. And I was ready for that. And I told people, also, I'm ready for that. I have no doubt. And then that was the time, to be honest, that I prepared myself. I was feeling that I'm ready. But today, I am really very, very thankful that I left and went to NBA and worked with Quinn, because the structure in my mind, end of the season that I spent in Utah together with Quinn and the NBA, in the NBA, that I did my, how to say, I don't know, I prepared myself or my philosophy and everything. I reviewed it and I changed a lot. I changed a lot. And I think that's a great combination of European basketball structure with NBA, because there are great masterminds over that that I work with. And I think I did my own plan. I fulfilled, let's say, that plan after seeing NBA, and I worked with Quinn also.
It was an extra layer to your whole baggage that you felt like that you can bring to the table.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Now I feel much more ready after I spend a year in NBA with Quinn. I don't know if someone else will be maybe not that much impact, but impact that he had on me in a year is amazing.
Yeah, it was, you refined your philosophy a little bit more.
Exactly.
How, what steps did you take when you signed with Türk Telekom? How did, how, what steps did you take to prepare for this, for the, let's say, the first week of practice? But, you know, during the summer after you signed, the thought process that you went through, then contacting the players, contacting the staff, communicating with your president, with the GM. Which steps were the most vital, you think, to prepare going into the season?
I think that's one thing is very important in Europe, and it's totally different than NBA. It's like player recruitment, the roster stuff and everything. I think coach need a word over there. And I told, because in NBA, it's a little bit different. You know that front office is taking care of much more than in Europe. There is not even a front office in Europe. So I said, let's clarify that. I will have my own way with my staff. I'm going to build up the roster. And I want you to follow me. And they accept. And I said, structural-wise, we need to change lots of things. I need you guys to follow it. And they were ready for that. So we start from zero, everything. Right now, even the weightlifting room, we changed totally. I tried to make a small kitchen for the players. I tried to rebuild the locker room, even the corridors that we have with the pictures and stuff. And I tried to use mottos. I love using that, which is from Queen again, because that you get into their mind. That's you make them believe in something. And you start with the words. And that words needs to be convenient. It's, you need to get in their mind and make them, in order to make them believe. So, and they were okay. Administration was okay with it. I have a great GM that was my player years ago. And he is great communicator also, Önder Külçebaş. And I'm very lucky to have him. And I have the second president of the team is always with us. And he's also one of the person. It's not easy in Europe to find a board member or, you know, administrator who is ready to follow the coach and the staff first. And then judge. It's very difficult in Europe. They judge first. Yes. They think they know much more. And then you are stuck. So I was just saying, let me to do my job. And then you judge however you want to do that. So that was the first step. And then we start to build up our roster. And we wanted to look, first of all, the characters of the players. That was the first thing. Because it's very, very important to have players who has desire of basketball. And I knew Tony Taylor from Europe. I knew him from Turkish League. I know his character. And he was the first signing that I have. And I told him, I showed him, I like to make at least FaceTime call or face-to-face talk with the players for sure before signing to, because I need to explain myself. And I told them, you need to see me and you need to look at my face, look me in the eye and feel that if I am lying, I'm not, you can trust me, or I need to see that I can trust you, because that's the first thing. Maybe you don't get that energy and you say, no, I will not work with that coach. But we need to see each other and talk to each other. Mm-hmm. So the first thing that I said, there was board like over here behind me, and he was the first name over there. I said, here is the first name. So I need to sign with you first, and then I will build up. And really, we did it in that way. And all other foreigners that we signed, Jaren Grant, Nate Sestina, Tyreek Jones, Axel Boutte, they all played in Europe somehow, but some of them still try to find their way to grow up, and some of them already played with ups and downs, but the offensive and defensive system that I drove in my mind, they fit in that perfectly. That was the beginning of the season, what I dreamed. And then we tried to find the Turkish players, which the market was almost gone, the Turkish players, before I signed. But the ones that we signed, ones really was the personalities that we want. Because if you have the right personalities and then the room is open for the growth, especially in Europe, you know that this is what I believe. I mean, in Europe, talent is very important, yes. But as a team, you have the right chemistry and you are capable of working together, you create much more impact than NBA, because rules helping you. If you are hungry, if you are playing with desire and you have passion, you play together, you fight together, the rules in Europe will help you always.
Yeah, there is a bigger emphasis on chemistry in Europe than there is in the NBA. Yes. For sure. In the NBA, it's kind of collaterally, it happens or it doesn't happen, and there's things you can do to amplify the culture, but culture is it's a big thing still, but it's nevertheless there's more emphasis on accumulating talent. In Europe, because the talent level is very dense, you're very close together in terms of small nitpick differences, you know, between the players, and therefore the bond and the chemistry and the common dinners, the relationship building is much more important. And I feel like the policy that we also have is, you know, like you want to have people around you that are good people by heart and hard workers, and the rest you can build on that. Obviously, they have to have some sort of talent to be professional basketball players. You can't just have a good person that's hardworking. But that's a fundamental. You set a good groundwork for the team to grow, and you can go from there.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about balance as a head coach. There's certain things that I wanted to talk in the background part, but as you know, I see you also posting family pictures, and his family is a big thing, and it's a big part of you. It feels like it. How do you deal with this job and balancing family and being successful and applying yourself to being a head coach, which takes a lot of energy, as we said, discussions and which we'll touch on after. But in terms of dedicating time to the family and getting away from the job, which is always on our minds, no matter what we do, it's a 24/7 mind occupying your mind.
Exactly.
But you still have to somehow learn to switch off. How do you switch off, and how do you balance and give time to the family and not the job?
Benas, what I believe for that balance, first of all, your partner is really, really important. And my wife, from the day first, she was supporting me, and she always been supportive. And without her, it's very, very difficult, because even though I was in Fenerbahce for 9 years, we were living in the same city. I was with my family, which last 2 years I am away from them. They stay in Istanbul, and I was in Utah, and then now in Ankara. But end of the day, the sacrifice that we have is a lot, because my wife is a doctor. She's working also a lot, but like in our job, the difficulty is, you know, all the families, they have time, whatever their working schedule, they have time weekends, right? But weekends, we are out. So weekdays, we are out. Weekends, we are out. So we have small gaps over there to spend it with family. And this is important. Your family is ready to spend those times, quality times, together with the full desire. And now I think that's my luck, that I have always had my wife on my back. She was always with me in any difficult situation, and my son growing up without feeling that absence, let's say. So I think this is not, if as a person, as a coach, however you call it, you try to balance that. If your partner is not ready for that, or she's not digesting that, she's not accepting that, you cannot deal with that. That has to be both sides' commitment. So I am the lucky one, because even though last 2 years I have much less time with my family, I really enjoy, like I always used to work, used to live with them 7/24. We spend quality time whenever we are together. And again, sacrifice is in all jobs that are sacrifice. And I think in our job, the biggest sacrifice is staying away from our families. But on the other hand, whenever you are together, if you have quality time, I think you can compensate that by giving the same feeling the ones you love.
Yeah, it's a very fine line, you know, like of how, like we like to take it to an extreme of being dedicated and perfectionist, and then you know, sometimes the other part suffers, that it takes a lot of empathy from the partner and a lot of understanding to put themselves in your shoes and accept the situation that we're in, that it's still for the greater good of the family, you know, at the end of the day. And if you are not with national team, for example, you have 2 months in the summertime where you can spend, and obviously you still have to recruit, you still have to scout, you have to prepare for the coming season, but you still have much more time to dedicate to the family, where you give back, you know, you give back in other ways. And I think there's a fine line, and it can be a strain, but it also, it takes two really level-headed people to understand the situation and to be committed to that.
Yeah, but from my side also, you know that before Utah, last 6 years, 5 out of 6 years, I was with Utah Jazz Summer League organization, which takes 3 weeks off you. So which takes 3 weeks from your family. And then 1 year in 2017, I was with Turkish national team in European Championship. Which took another 2 months of summertime. So without dedication of my family about my desire, you know, sharing that they know that how important that's for me, it's impossible to succeed. It's really impossible, because even you feel that you love this job, this is part of your life, and you want to be great about it. But if you don't feel your family is still not happy, then this is always going to bother you.
Yes. Yeah. That little hint of emotion inside that you have, that is something is missing, then it can throw a rock into the wheel, and mm-hmm. It's difficult. It's definitely difficult. But that's the profession we live in. Let's move on to communication and politics a little bit before we go into the basketball coaching politics. I wanted to talk about the coaching communication in terms of discussions with your staff these days. What are the discussions mostly that you bring your staff together? How do you bring your staff together? What topics? How do you provoke thoughts from your staff, and how do you make them feel comfortable with telling you their opinion and not be all yes men? Because a lot of times in Europe we have too many yes men. Everybody's afraid to lose their job and say something against the coach. The coach has to be very secure with other person's opinion. So how do you amplify their opinion, and how do you amplify their thoughts to be able to express them?
One thing that right now in my staff, I have 6 assistant coaches. So comparing in Europe, it's a lot. You know that in Europe there are, but I believe in that, because like 2 of those coaches is kind of a player development coaches, but still they have assignments, they have role. So and all these coaches first time together, and I am a rookie coach. But what I believe from the day first, I said, let's ask questions and feel free. And sorry, and feel free. You hear me?
Yeah. Yep.
Sorry. And feel free to ask questions. And whenever they don't ask questions, I start asking questions to them. And one thing that I do during the meetings between us, I first want to listen to them. And until they say something, each one of them say something, I don't talk. Because this is like yes man psychology. People wait from you to say something and then want to follow that path to be secure, right? But if you don't talk, and if you don't give a clue about what you think or what you believe, then they need to talk, and they need to openly and bravely to say whatever they think, because there is nothing to lose over that, because you don't know what he thinks. Of course, the time period passes and they understand the way you think. But you start feeling that if they want to satisfy you, they talk for this or not. And once you are honest, I think you should be able, I do that at least, that's my way. I honestly and openly talk and say, don't talk just to satisfy me. Because we end and the day by day, we understand each other more, because we are a group who knows each other but never work together. These are 2 different things. And now I think we are in a great way that everybody is openly tell their opinion. We discuss during the game. We discuss also. Sometimes our voices goes up And I make them feel free about that because there is no, first of all, as a coach, you need to have a huge ego. Ego, like as a leader, you need to do that. But conversation with your staff, you should have no ego. You should be ready to be very open to listen all the details, and you should be very open to say sorry once you make the wrong decision or you react in a bad way. So after every single game, I thank to my staff because they really do great job. Imagine that I was there and I'm watching at least 4 or 5 games. I do my preparation as a head coach right now, but they work like crazy, prepare me a report, all the number details, blah, 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 because I'm pushing them the way I prepared. I am pushing them to prepare with the whole details. So they do all the work. They do great job. They sacrifice a lot. And then you will just act like you know everything. This is first of all, very disrespectful.
Yes.
And that breaks the trust between you and your staff. I think respect, if you want to get respect, you need to respect. That's the first thing in my life. So I try to respect them. I am very open to listen, and I am very open to discuss the truths that I have and also the truths that they have. I am ready to discuss, and I think we are getting better and better every day.
Yeah, it's a killer when the coach says everything, that he knows everything already. Then why have assistant coaches? It's
exactly.
And I was going to ask you, what situations do you have the most empathy for the assistant coaches? And those are exactly the situations where you know, you feel you invested as an assistant coach, as a scout or whatever, you put all the work and you want it to be heard, respected, but also understood. You know, it doesn't have to be accepted or applied, but they have to be understood that there's a gross amount of time that was put in into the video work, into the paperwork, into the playbook, etc. And then, you know, if the coach doesn't value that, then why am I here? You know, and I was going to ask you, what situations do you feel the most empathy for your assistant coaches? And
I think two things that I pay. I think I feel like if I am in their shoes, I would feel in this way because I've been in that position. First thing is the creativity that they bring. I am always open to listen, and I try to execute and do as much as possible, because if you are not open and if you don't show the respect that you have to their creativity, then next day it's going to get less and you'll be gone. And this is the worst thing. So I'm always open to listen to the new ideas, whatever it is, and I'm ready to open that, let's say, chapter and execute it and see together if this is working or not working. So I show that I trust you and I am open to execute it. I don't afraid, which I learned from Queen and Jelkova same way. If they believe, they will go and do that. So, and then that brings, also you put much more responsibility to that coach, that once he brings an idea, because that guy is going to execute it or will be open. So it brings much more responsibility that he has to bring a better idea.
Yes.
That has to be accountable one. So you give the responsibility on his shoulders in that case, because he needs to come with a solid, you know, trustable and good or new idea that you can execute all together, because that guy trusts me. So if he trusts me, I need to do a better job. I try to give that feeling. And second thing is during the game, because I live that a lot with Jaiko, and he was very open that, because you come with new ideas. And he always listened to me. Like, he listened, he didn't do that, but listen. So he gave you in even the most crucial games, most crucial moment, he was listening. So that's respect. He was paying attention. Mm-hmm. And end of the day, he says, no, I don't do that. Or this is stupid idea. Or this is, but he's listening to you.
Yes.
That's important. That's respect. And he gained much more respect because he was respecting me.
At the end, it's his decision to use it or not. But you,
of course.
That's why my respect level for head coaches is so high, because they have to absorb so much information and they have to have a great filter. I mean, it has to be, you have to, and it comes with experience to be able to differentiate between a good idea and a bad idea. There's some assistant coaches that just amplify an idea that you had, And it's not necessarily a good idea, but then there's a critical thought that needs to come in to challenge the idea a little bit. And the coach has to filter all this out. Is it a correct challenge? Is it not a correct challenge? Is it basically a judge, you know? So there's a lot of, it comes with experience. I think that you're able to differentiate, but you absolutely have to listen to all of them.
I think this is also about your individual preparation. Experience, yes, I agree. But also as a coach, how much you prepared against opponent yourself or to the game. Mm-hmm. Because if you are ready as a coach, you are fully ready, you can filter much quick, much better. And the time you start filtering good, the time you start filtering that and your assistant is understanding that you already know what's going on. And then again, he's going to come with an idea really valuable. Because he will now question himself, should I go and ask him? Because he's ready.
Yeah,
he's ready.
So let me ask you quickly on the difference. Just to maybe there is something there. Maybe there's something not something there. I don't know. Maybe I'm throwing an empty gym and nobody hears the ball bounce. But what's the difference in communication between NBA players and European players? Maybe there's not a difference. Maybe there's a difference of the approach and the communication specifically with let's say, you know, like the players that you want not only have video sessions, but that you prepare for the game on game day. Maybe you don't talk to them as much, but during practice days, preparing them and reaching them inside to make them trust you. Is there a certain way of approaching NBA players versus European players, or is it just people are people?
I think people are people. There is no difference. I think you need to be yourself. You need to make them feel that they can trust you. And you need to make them to understand that you are a person or you are a coach. Actually, as a person, because you sometimes need to, not sometimes, majority of the times also, you need to talk also with them about the things out of basketball.
Mm-hmm.
So as a person that you have experience, they can trust you, and the ideas that you give working basketball-wise or life. So once you catch that relation, once they trust you, I think people are people. It's not about, the only difference is culture. So the player that you have, I had Ulanovas, Lithuanian player, great person, and I really enjoyed having basketball conversations with him. But the way you talk with Edgaras, and the way you talk with another rookie American player, or the way you talk with another experienced American player or Montenegrin player is just about culture. So people are people. And I think the way you approach them, the way you use the language, the only difference, I think. End of the day, bottom line, you need to be a person that people can trust you, people can build up a respect, and people can believe in you. And then no matter what country, what league you play, people are people.
Yes, I agree with you. I think that. And I always felt like I took the first step to open up. I tell them something personal. I tell them something that I struggle with. Maybe everybody's fighting some demons at some point, right? So we are during the season like a family, and we spend a lot of time with them, with each other. And you want to open up to somebody, you know. There's, it feels like a group of brothers. So no matter exactly. if it's a coach and a player, I feel like there's still a relationship of the human aspect and not necessarily a professional aspect. I feel like, and whenever I open up and I was honest, I got honesty back, and I risk being made fun of, or I risk being I trust them, basically. I trust them with my emotions, and then they, at some point, they will trust me with their emotions, and it will be my responsibility to handle that information correctly as well. And that's crucial for a lot of assistant coaches and coaches to understand.
I always tell my players now, as a head coach, that's going to be my motto. I keep repeating them, as a player and as a person, be yourself. Who are you? What kind of person you are? So if you are a hustler, you are focused, you are hard worker, you need to be everyday same. And as a person also, you be yourself. Like you said, maybe at some point they will laugh at you for some reasons, but you be yourself, you will gain that respect. And once you gain that respect and trust, everything will be fine.
You ready for my ETOs?
Okay.
I'm ready to shoot. I'm going to pass you the ball. You'll be ready to shoot.
Okay.
What's the worst advice you ever received?
Don't trust the players.
What does a perfect game day look to you?
Sorry, I lost your voice.
What does a perfect game day look like to you?
The shoot around. If my players are laughing, happy at the shoot around, that's a perfect day for the game.
What does a good life look like to you?
Family, sun, and sea.
Best personal purchase that you made in the last 12 months?
Won lots of games.
Say it again.
Won lots of games, I said.
No, personal purchase. Personal purchase. That's something that you bought. Something that you bought personally.
Ah, sorry. Purpose. I understand purpose.
No. Okay. That's a good question, too.
Shoe. Sure. I bought a pair of shoes.
Okay. You're casting a dinner party with you and three other people, dead or alive. Who are they?
Mustafa Kemal Atatürk, the leader of my country, Michael Jordan, and my dad.
What are the areas you think you can improve on the most, personally and professionally?
Personally, to be more open to listen, I would say. More. I think I am, but can be much more. Because the more I am ready to open, I am ready to listen more, I am learning more, and I am improving more. This is how I felt. And what was the second one?
Professionally,
to watch more games.
What's your favorite failure? This is a Tim Ferriss question that I like to ask.
Okay.
Everyone.
That's I got fired from Olinedine when I was head coach. That's my favorite failure. And then this road opened up somehow from the bottom again.
And the final one, something personal about you that nobody would find on Google.
I think my picture without mustache.
Okay, you're going to send it to me one day.
Okay, I will. No problem.
At Erdem Baba, thank you very much. We're good
thank
friends.
You, Benaz.
Yeah, it was a pleasure. I really enjoyed this conversation.
Me also. Thank you.
Yeah, hopefully we'll, our roads will cross paths really soon, and we can have some
hopefully.
More of these.
Hopefully, but we need to drink a good coffee. Don't forget, and I will follow you. Of course, you are the expert one.
We will. Thank you. Thanks everybody for listening and watching, and see you soon. Bye.
Thank you. Bye bye.